What does the future of power actually look like?
People are adapting well, it seems, to load shedding. Mm. This is definitely better than 2008 when we had load shedding. If you recall, we didn't have these devices, mobility that enables productivity despite load shedding. We're almost able to, as long as we know about it, schedule our lives appropriately to cope.
And we do seem, that's the one thing. I mean, I said it to a friend the other day and I said, the one good thing about load shedding now is it's actually predictable. We know that what time it's going off. We know what time it's coming back on and we can plan for it. And she said to me, it's like an abused wife. And saying, well, at least he doesn't hit me in my face. No, I don't think it is like that. We can predict it, and it does mean you can plan for it.
So it is a lot better because the information is available, and there's this app, Eskom Sapush,
right,
which is brilliant in terms of keeping you posted.
And absolutely,
that's a free service that people have created. If you don't have that app, they're already under severe load.
Right,
and the app
exactly.
sometimes kind of load sheds.
Yes.
But they're an excellent app, and they're providing this information so we can better manage it. So it does feel like we have gone a bit backward. Unfortunately, I think it's going to take some time before we are able to rebuild, get back into good shape with regard to our distribution of power. At the moment, I think looking forward, we really have two issues that we have to consider. The one is a South African context where we have government-regulated energy.
Mm.
And how energy and the future of energy unfolds in that context is one conversation that we should pursue. The other part of it is what is happening with the future of technology when it comes to energy and what is available out there in terms of future energies. So I'm going to start with the second bit and talk about how the world is greatly changing around energy.
Mm.
Solar and renewable energy is just looking absolutely astounding.
Right.
From a cost perspective, originally we were looking at about, I think the example often used is approximately $60 per kilowatt hour.
Right.
To produce a kilowatt hour of energy, it was costing $60, which is a far greater number than other means of producing, like coal. But that has dropped exponentially over the last few years.
As it would, as more facilities come online, as the components become cheaper.
Exactly. As the technology gets better, as the availability of the technology gets better.
Right.
The price has dropped. It was $30, then $3.
Wow.
Now, at 30 US cents in general, and
incredible,
even done for 3 cents, I believe. So it's been dropping dramatically, and in many countries, it's recently, since 2012, become cheaper than other forms of energy to produce.
Mm.
And that means that with this availability of solar energy at very low cost, it's totally disruptive. The same way as cell phones have been disruptive to our landlines, this is a totally disruptive way of producing energy. It's more abundant energy that's cleaner and it's cheaper. Mm. So it becomes a bit of a no-brainer. Now, that to me is a great potential future in terms of energy.
Especially in this country where you've got
abundant sunlight.
And in some areas, incredible amount of wind.
And we are in one of the best positions in the whole world in terms of our renewable energies. South Africa is a marvel. It is a marvel in so many ways, and we have so much opportunity to do so much better with where we are. And that means that...
Does that mean it has got to be deregulated?
It does mean that. So I want to mention, before we look at that South African context, one other thought is that by 2040, one of the main German producers of power has predicted that all power will be free in that country. Power will be free for people. So we're sitting here just to juxtapose that with our context of where we're looking at year-on-year compounding increases by percentage.
Yeah, by ridiculous percentages.
By really high percentages that we can't really tolerate anymore. We're seeing this juxtaposed against this outlook and view that all power from a utility, this is a company that makes its money from selling this product. Utility is saying all power will be free for people. That is an astounding thought, and if you just think
what's their business model?
Well, that's a great question. That's a great question, and what are they ultimately going to be selling us?
Yeah, what's their product?
Well, I think that the idea is, as we shift into this world of no longer encountering this idea of scarcity, no better do we understand scarcity than when we're sitting in the dark in load shedding. We juxtapose that with this idea of an abundant future where all power is free for all people. Imagine what that can do to our economy. if we were able to get ourselves into a position where power became free.
Mm.
Power is the cornerstone of any economy. Of energy course. Is everything we need to
right.
do just about everything to produce. And we run our lives fundamentally on energy. In fact, it is the very basic building block in a sense for the creation of innovation. We talk about innovation. We want to innovate in this country. If you think of a Maslow's hierarchy of needs applied to innovation, energy is just the bottom rung.
It's a very basic.
It's the very most fundamental building block. Without energy, we find ourselves in a really challenged position. So we keep juxtaposing against the South African context. So let's look at that a bit and consider that.
I'm chatting to Adam Pantanowitz. He is a lecturer. He's on the Singularity University faculty. We're talking ethics in the new world, and today we're specifically focusing on the future of energy. Adam is an electrical and a biomedical engineer. All right, so let's look at the South African context. I'd love your thoughts, by the way, 34519 or 0618951019. Get involved in this conversation. Have you moved towards renewable energy in any way in your lives, be it for your geysers or for anything else?
And I think that we need to start considering that more greatly. The other day I tweeted out, I said, come on, South Africa, we need to subsidize the move to solar. So if I were in government, my first initiative would probably be subsidize solar. To help
get it into people's homes.
Get it
surely.
Into people's homes. We have this abundance of sun. Get into people's homes and subsidize that to take strain off the grid. The grid is strained. We've hit a ceiling on what Eskom can produce at the moment.
You know, if everybody was producing their own power, you know, in many countries around the world, you sell your power back onto the main grid. So, if I'm away and I'm not using a lot of my electricity, from solar, that's going to go back into the grid and it's going to help my neighbor effectively.
Absolutely. And this is the
idea. It's an absurdity that we don't do this.
It is. And the selling it back to the grid covers the infrastructure costs, the original costs of putting that in.
Right.
So, you get this cross-subsidization effect, and with government subsidy to help, the government is totally incentivized to go along with something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We speak about the South African context where we've had regulated power for such a long time, and that system has failed us. We sit here, we are forward-looking and think, okay, well, Eskom needs to rebuild. The truth is that there's economic pressure on this company as well. They haven't been able to sustain, they haven't been able to deliver on the power plants that were promised. And this has created a massive problem for the country, both in terms of the way that we live our daily lives and in terms of the ability that we have to produce. So we have taken a big step back because the country needs to compete on a global scale.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we found ourselves basically back to square one in many ways, at least while we go through this stage four load shedding, which feels very onerous.
Well, you see, that's the problem, is we're in crisis management now. So it's very hard to plan for the future when you're sitting in crisis management, that you act in a crisis situation.
Definitely.
That you're just trying to find a solution. Leslie says, I have a solar geyser and have literally only needed to switch the power on to warm water twice since November when I put it in, because there's been so much sun. How does one translate this type of energy for electricity? Can we put solar panels on the roof and link it to certain appliances, etc.?
That can absolutely be done. The way that it's done is the issue that we face is how to store the energy that's created.
Right. I was going
to
say, I know what people are doing now is using solar, and they are charging inverters, which then run appliances in the house.
So it's solar that charges some batteries, and then the inverter allows the batteries to power a normal circuit in the house.
Right.
So you can run appliances. There are certain appliances which are restricted that one can't run.
Right.
But that said, the majority of houses can be run through solar energy. There are people out there who have solar energy that do not experience the interruption of load shedding. Nearly seamlessly, they switch into their own systems when solar goes down. But the cost of these systems is really great. And they're almost not justifiable because the payback time and the saving of energy
long.
Is too long right now.
Well, there's a convenience factor. Today it's more about that you are not going, you're not going down when the power goes down, rather than your payback, because it does take a while to do that, doesn't it?
Yes. So there could be a few reasons why one would be motivated to purchase, but one would be motivated to purchase solar energy for potentially savings or for potentially having the convenience factor.
Right.
But the problem that we face is that, you know, I believe the government is not yet on board with these ideas.
Right.
The government is still trying to control.
But why are they? I mean, this is years and years, and why isn't there more pushback? Why aren't we hearing from opposition parties like the DA, like the, you know, I don't know, the EFF, to say, listen, you guys have messed this up. You have clearly not managed one of the most critical elements of our society and environment from every aspect of life, and you know, now you have to deregulate. You've got to open this up, like you eventually had to open up Telkom.
Absolutely, and look at what that's done for the telecommunications industry. It's flourished. The telecommunications industry has done astoundingly well for stakeholders, shareholders, for people. Data must fall. We launched that business Terrific in 2011 to try and bring down prices. We believe that we had an impact on the industry to bring down prices. What happens is competition in energy would breed price decreases. We would find energy being cheaper for us, more accessible, more abundant. There is no doubt that we need entrepreneurs on the ground who want to make a change, who desire the opportunity to make a change, who are then enabled to make that change. So not only do I believe that we should be subsidizing solar for small business, for big business, and for residential, I also believe that we should be unbundling the accessibility of the grid, this monopoly over a grid. You know, if everything was going fine in South Africa, I don't think we would necessarily be having these conversations.
Right.
But from a power perspective,
my worry is that I'm not even sure that we're having the conversations about the future and sustainability and alternative.
I agree with you.
But are we having the conversation about opening this up to private enterprise? I know that years ago, there were a couple of companies looking at putting in building power plants, you know, getting, you know, coal from other areas, and they were stopped.
Absolutely. I mean, let's look at other cascading effects of this crisis. So I believe that we're going to start to see problems with our water quality our water pumping.
Yeah, we're starting to see, you're seeing articles slowly being bled into the press around
this. So there's no doubt it's going to happen, because it's just an inevitability of time that at certain point in time, there's no energy. And the reality is that I saw a stat this morning that 14 million South Africans during stage 4 load shedding are without power. The reality is, if there's no energy to do the thing does not get done. I want to contrast that with what we started with this idea of abundant energy, this idea that we can have a great amount of energy all around us for all of us to use. And let's think about what happened in the Western Cape recently with the water crisis. Now, desalination is one of those technologies that can solve this. And what's required for it? Energy. Costly energy.
Right.
So if we look at how we need to move forward in this country from a long-term perspective, there's no doubt in my mind that we need to be investing our energy right now as human beings into solar, into renewables. Even though the technologies are not 100% perfect, they are ripening all the time, and we can alleviate a lot of strain on the grid.
And getting cheaper all the time.
And then the outlook with water needs to be considered. Just because we're out of crisis mode now doesn't mean that we aren't going to be back in that crisis mode if we do nothing.
Right.
And this inertia, this apathy that we have, we've known about Eskom's problems as a country for a long time.
Well, the fact that we couldn't solve this problem since 2008, that's 11 years. And if you look at what's been added onto the grid, it's almost negligible.
There has not been a delivery of... There's not been a delivery of the power stations that were supposed to come online.
Right.
And those power stations are not a silver bullet. We haven't even begun to touch on the environmental effects of all of this.
Right.
And the environment needs us to drop carbon emissions. We need it, because we're creating even more dire long-term problems when we aren't.
And that is where we leave this conversation. Adam Pantanovitz, thank you as always. Adam is an electrical and biomedical engineer. We've been talking about ethics in the new world.